Hello and welcome to episode 362 of the Spitballing Pod. I'm Luke Byron, joined as always by Tom Kennett and Jack Harper. Plenty to get into this week, and we will start with the incredible comeback that took place in West London on Saturday evening. We'll discuss the shenanigans from both goalkeepers, the barefaced lies from Mikhailo Mudryk, the performances from both sides across the 90, and what it tells us about both teams right now. We'll also discuss the Merseyside derby, the decision to send off Ashley Young, the decision not to send off Ibrahima Konate, and the overall performances of both sides. In closing, we'll discuss the form of both Ollie Watkins and Callum Wilson, with Ivan Toney waiting in the wings, and any other bits that may just need cleaning up before we call it a night. First, though, how are we doing today?
I think I'm doing better than Jack, judging by what he was saying pre-pod.
Yeah, as you two already know, this has to go down as one of the worst weekends in the history of my weekends. Just awful from start to finish. Totaled cars, total wipeouts in all sports that I actually enjoy. Parking fines, even though that I paid for them. Will it ever end?
Well, this is what we're here for.
I'm sure we'll pick you back up.
This is going to be a very different podcast. It's just going to be you trying to talk me down off a ledge.
I'm not sure I'm the guy you want to look towards.
He might be pushing you.
We'll get straight into the Chelsea-Arsenal game. Did do a little check news of the week, as I say. Maybe we'll get back there for Christmas. Tough start. Chelsea took the game to us early. Chelsea's midfield did look like it was clicking. I saw Potch trying to sell a few sob stories that he had players in South America, as if we didn't have the same amount of players in South America. Gallagher did.
I hate
his
when managers do that. I hate it.
Gallagher did his thing, and the last time we played you, I couldn't believe that whoever it would have been in charge, Frank. I can believe he didn't do it. Every manager other than Frank that has had Conor Gallagher against us basically says, "You sit on whoever their most creative player is, and we'll rely on the rest of us stopping everyone else." Gallagher did this here, sits on Odegaard again. Terrible, terrible game from him. Chelsea lined up with almost two false nines, how it was described by commentary. In reality, both Sterling and Palmer pulled wide, stretched the centre-backs, and almost just bunch with the full-backs. And then they dash in the middle, sometimes crossing over each other to just cause as much confusion as possible. And it did work, at least early on.
Definite game plan there. Like, if you look at how we formed up, there was no one up front. It was basically a 4-6 kind of scenario where they've obviously pinpointed your creativity, I should say, in the midfield with Odegaard and the engine of Rice. And I think that's what, if you look back at some of the big games, Rice finds a bit of joy in these big games because he comes into his own, he pushes forward, he drives. We just tried to suffocate space and then break ridiculously fast. I haven't seen us play like that pragmatically. I know Tuchel, but that was probably our normal playing style, so we didn't have to alter it. Going from having most of the ball in pretty much all the other games that we've played to going, right, hang on, we're going to change it all here. You have to go back to Conte, really, to see that level of pragmatism from a manager in the dugout, which was impressive.
I would disagree, because I don't think that's how you play. I thought actually you were trying to take the game to us early on.
I think you played into our hands. I think we were almost shocked about how well it worked, because I think we were built to suffocate your creativity in space and then break really quickly. It's just we were turning you over so much that it looked like we were the ones controlling the game. But that's when you talk about the fluid positions up front with Sterling and Mudryk kind of crossing over one another. That's what made it give it almost an illusion that we were controlling, because we were just turning you over for fun.
Well, there's a side that most Arsenal fans want to see in action, and we saw 99% of it, the main difference being parties in there for Jorginho.
It's quite a significant difference.
Yeah, playing Jorginho as a six here didn't work for me. I thought we saw all of the worst of him in the first half, especially. Even in what you were doing offensively, Palmer can do the one-touch football thing all day. And I don't think anyone wanted to get too close in case we flicked around the corners of Sterling. so he wasn't really being roughed up at all. Is this something that you do think was to match us, yeah, or does it say more about what Poch thinks of Brozier and Jackson?
I think Brozier, because he came out of the international break carrying a knock, I think that probably made his decision a little bit easier. I do think he probably looked at the tools at his disposal here and thought, this is how we beat them. That's the first time I can remember us going into a big game with a proper game plan in a long time. Usually it's...
Frank will do that.
Well, it's usually, it's, we'll play our stuff and we'll just back the fact that...
they can't live with us.
Yeah.
Despite but, all evidence suggests...
exactly that.
We can live with you.
Whereas this is the first time where I thought, hang on a minute, we're really combating what Arsenal are good at, and that's made us look twice as good because of that.
If we don't play City the game before, and Gabriel and Saliba for the last 2 weeks have been being praised in almost all corners for the performance they had against Haaland, do you think that changes the decision at all? Or do you think this would have been the game plan regardless? Because the idea, I think, for most teams is push us back, win the aerial duels and move up the pitch. This was kind of, I guess, the same thing, but a different way of doing it.
Yeah, it was kind of like bunch your midfield in all together and then break where the space is. I mean, that sounds so rudimentary, but to actually put it into action against a team like Arsenal that can move it around and move up the pitch with pace is a lot easier said than done. I think playing with two false nines almost, because the defenders, you know, usually when they say, when you play with a false nine, oh, the defenders, they're just having a walk, like a walk in the park. They don't know, there's no one to mark. This is where I guess it worked, where they didn't know who to mark, didn't know who to pick up, and then that just created so much more space for some of our really quick players. I think that was one of the main things as well, as the pace that we had, which... Well,
Sterling won't have believed his luck that to open the game, he's being left to play ISO against Zinchenko. Mm. And like a few of our players, when they're really bad, when they're bad, they're really bad. And it looked to me, I don't know, more thought had been put in, as you say, into nullifying us. And then you see what happens offensively at the other end. It just... I didn't think it was from a pragmatic way of doing it. I thought that was maybe just the best way to get out of the pitch. You got all your best players on the pitch rather than it being such a tactical thing. But Gallagher was crashing the box. Jorginho was offering little to no protection.
I think that the legs that Gallagher probably had one of his best games for us in that game. It's been coming. He's been playing well all season. But that game was, like you said earlier, just highlighted everything that he's good at. Carrying the ball sometimes, breaking up play. He nullified both Jorginho and Rice, in my opinion, pretty much all the game.
6 days a week, Chelsea fans don't want Gallagher, other than the games in which he plays.
I've always been fighting Gallagher's case. His breakout season, I'm on record as saying. But
I think that changed.
This is one of those mount situations where everyone hates him and then he doesn't play and it's like, oh, hang on a minute. And then they'll have a game like this and Gallagher's been having a season like this. He's been really, really consistent.
It sounds ridiculously simplistic as well, but like he's someone who actually cares.
Yeah.
And you do look at a squad full of new signings. Probably half of them won't work out, half of them will. So, and they probably know it. Yeah. So how many of these people care? Well, he definitely cares. And it kind of sets a standard for the rest of the team. You can see them, kind of especially early on in this game, where the energy he was giving kind of set the tone for you to, like you said, you ended up pressing them back probably more than you probably thought you were going
to. It can make or break you being given the captain's armband, can't it?
Yeah.
I've seen Arsenal players be killed by giving... Thomas Vermaelen was given the armband and it was like a new player. Gallagher seems to be the same in a better sense.
You'd never question his character, would you, to be fair? You'd go, is he the most talented player? Far from it.
Exactly.
But he's good enough and he's got the character traits that you
when
want.
When Chelsea accepted that 40 million bid from Everton and he said... Yeah, I'll be all right.
Come on, give me a break.
I thought, okay, there's some intelligence in the guy.
Yeah, and like you said, he cares. He's always going to put that effort in. And he's keeping players out of the team. I mean, midfield is probably the one place where we don't have that many injuries apart from Lavia.
Mm. And we thought that as soon as he was fit, then we knew your three.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't seem to be the case.
Now it just seems like exactly what we said earlier. Why did we buy both?
Yeah,
we know why you bought both. I wasn't shocked that Jorginho was playing ahead of Partey, but I was disappointed. I think you're just taking too much out of Rice's game when you play him as an eight. With With City, I thought it worked with Jorginho there because we weren't going to have much of the ball. They also didn't have a midfield that was going to put that much pressure on us. Kovacic, I think, was the most athletic player they had in there. I don't know. I think you can max out on Rice's athleticism if Partey is behind him, because there's like a level of confidence needed to get forwards and get pushing forward with his instincts. With Jorginho behind him, it looked like he was having in a battle as to whether he should push forward or not. Yeah. He was like a 6.75 and we needed an 8. And so Odegaard's then the only player forward and we've just got Gallagher on him. Jorginho's distribution wasn't getting us out at all. No. Rice just looked like he didn't want to trek into the final third at all.
That's when Chelsea fans used to come up with all the Jorginho hate, and there was a lot of Chelsea fans that did that, me being included, towards the latter years. That's because he detracts away from what other players can do because they're constantly worried that he can't be the last midfielder. We've seen him try and track back. We know what that's like.
We saw him try and dribble.
That's where my issue is, though, with the management, because if we all know that, then why are you putting him in that position? If we all know that Rice's best position is as a six, and we all know that with Jorginho, the best thing to do is he's going to keep you ticking over. And I think he's in there as a guy. I think he knew that you were going to try and outrun us, and he did this against Newcastle. I think the same idea was there, that we aren't going to try and match you physically, and so we're going to play around you and through you, and Jorginho probably offers that better. I think Partey can do that, but he clearly didn't trust Partey for this game, so he didn't even come off the bench.
Not a fitness issue with Partey?
Well, I think that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. He went and he played 45 minutes for Ghana. The fact we send a fitness coach with him every time he leaves the country, it's... The guy
just keep an eye on him. nothing untoward.
The guy can't stay fit as it is, and I think we're saying, okay, let's get as far as we can, and then hopefully have him when it gets to crunch time. Whether that works or not, I think the bloke can still get injured anyway. And these are probably the games that wheel him out in this and play Jorginho when we've got Sheffield next weekend.
One training session with us, and he'd be out. Career-ending injury, probably, judging by us.
Well, it looked like to me there was a bit more purpose to the Chelsea midfield. It didn't look like three expensive players that have been chucked in. It did look like there was some kind of clicking going in there. Let's talk about the penalty. In real time, I was convinced it was a penalty by Saliba, and it's one of them where
40,000 other people were agreeing.
It's like, just get the ball out of play and put us out of our misery. It's not like FIFA, where if you keep it in play long enough, then maybe you're going to get away with the kicking. This one, when seeing it back, I won't argue like most other Arsenal fans are, because I think I've kind of set my stall out when it comes to handball and there's no real going back now.
You can try.
I listened to, on TikTok, it came up as the anniversary of us discussing the Jesus penalty against Liverpool last season. Not my best look.
Yeah. Nice, we had a bit of time though.
Yeah, Saliba jumps to try and head across away. He's beaten to the ball in the air by Mudryk, which I think is the first real issue here.
Yeah.
Mudryk's header then strikes his left arm, which is raised away from his body. The issue for me, really, is that Chris Kavanagh does not want to give this penalty. He's watching this so many times. Like, he sees the common sense in this situation, which is... And I think we get the same in the Liverpool game, which we'll get onto, where the ref does not want to give the penalty that he's being shown. And he's clearly told enough times, you've got to give it. And so he points to the spot.
This might be the one commentary that we don't hear from VAR, because...
Well, I'll tell you the one we're not going to hear. We're going to get onto that because I've heard of their shenanigans there. The issue with this, and that's what Andy Murray of all people raising this. If you look at the still... When Saliba and Mudryk are both jumping, their arms are in identical positions, which tells you that it is a natural position that you're jumping with. They say that if he was seen to have his hand recoiling at the time the balls go in there, they would know there's an attempt to get his hand out of the way in that like 0.1 of a second in which the ball has gone towards him. And that's why it could be ruled out. And that's why, supposedly, because if we're doing the close proximity thing, Nicholas Jackson against Liverpool in the first game of the season.
So,
they say because his hand was pulling away, that made a big difference. So
put it this way, if you flip it around,
blimey.
If Mudryk scores with his arm in that position, it comes off his arm, you want that disallowed, right?
Also, I'm saying I think it is a penalty.
Yeah.
Because
in
terms of what is a penalty now and isn't a penalty now.
But that's my point. Like, the people that would argue that it wasn't, if that ball hits Mudryk's arm and they're both in identical positions and it goes in, everyone's crying out for that goal to be ruled out for handball.
So I guess the difference would be you can't score with your hand anyway. So whether it's natural or not, right. Then...
Well, you can't score with your hand because... Of the rule, meaning it would be handball and a penalty.
Yeah, but there's never been a thing with that says it's if your hand in a natural position, then we'll let the goal go in. In this, they're claiming that the natural position thing is in effect, and the ruling here is that Saliba's hand isn't in a natural position, which is why it's a penalty. The whole thing makes no sense in any way at all.
I think if you eye test it, if we're really taking our tinted spectacles off, that's happening at the other end. You're screaming for it. It happened.
I think it is a penalty.
Yeah, no, I know. There's no
doubt.
I meant just more.
From the second I saw it, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
And it's the same. I couldn't believe there was questions regarding the Romero penalty at the Emirates, for example.
Yeah, we couldn't believe that it wasn't given in real time because you quite audibly hear the ball.
It was one that stuck out.
So the referee
smacked his hand and it just smacked the ball.
So they say that the referee is telling the VAR that the proximity is the issue and that's why he hasn't given it.
Right.
And then the VAR are telling him it's still a penalty. And that's where the whole thing comes in because...
Proximity clearly just isn't a thing then, is it?
Well, that's...
Not really, because we haven't seen many where they go, okay, proximity is being applied. Because, like, you're not going to get much closer than this was. I mean, you can get a little bit, but not much.
I think it depends... Ultimately now, I think what's happening is they referee the games based on what Howard Webber said the Monday before. And so...
That's good.
Well, I think Ashley Young might not get sent off, and I think he should have, and we'll get onto that, if Kovacic has been sent off the week before. If Kovacic has been sent off and the directive the week before has been, you know, we've ruined what was a great game for Super Sunday because of two bookings together, then I think the next big game, which is the Merseyside Derby, Ashley Young there probably gets a... Don't do that again.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah.
And I think this is what happens. It's not... The consistency isn't there. The consistency is a week. We've got this cycle of a week and it's just going to keep going. Mm. You won't have seen in the ground, I think you've seen on Match of the Day since, Sterling and Palmer are having a discussion that Enzo, who I don't believe is any kind of captain, has to be the one to say, basically...
I think he has.
Let him have it.
I may be wrong, but we've had so many captains because of injuries. I think he has.
Is
that arm one's been passed around a bit. That.
Is the biggest issue here, why the hell does Sterling think he should be on penalties? If he had taken four in his career and he scored four in his career, I'd understand you trying to stamp some seniority. We've seen quite clearly the bloke is shite at penalties.
Yeah.
He's had seven Premier League penalties and he's missed four.
I didn't realise the bloke should not be near penalties.
No. And still he's grabbing the ball. I'm sure that was the stat they said. He's at least missed four.
Yeah.
Well, if it's 40%, it's something.
We've had it previously with
penalties and with England where they're sort of like going, why won't Sterling have it? I was like, and I didn't know this stat. And I'm looking at you going, are you on crack? We do not want that man on. Sterling's horrible. Mm. In terms of who technically, you know, strikes the ball better out of him and Cole Palmer. Mm. No contest.
Yeah,
I get why he was trying to stamp some seniority because he's one of Chelsea's most senior players.
Yeah.
But you're also part of that is also knowing kind of when to defer because you end up actually making yourself look more stupid.
This never happens. I think once someone's got the ball in their hands, all you're doing is being a hindrance if you're then causing an issue of it.
Yeah,
you're putting more pressure on there.
The only way you'll get it is if someone else goes, no, let him have it.
Yeah,
don't go and get it yourself.
I feel like I'm down
in trouble
now, but I'm almost certain that's what they said at the time with Sterling's penalty record. Either way, it's not good.
No, I feel very confident it wouldn't be pretty.
I'm not hearing that stat and thinking you must be wrong.
Yeah.
I fully believe that stat.
Palmer also has the... Aura feels overused these days. But he has the feel of it. I didn't doubt that he was putting it in. He carries himself with a certain confidence.
He definitely does.
He's done it at City. He scored against us in the Community Shield when there was a real lack of quality that day. He has taken responsibility very quickly. I was going to ask you later, but I can ask you now. Of the signings made under the new ownership, is he the best? Is it too early to say?
He's probably... From what we've seen, for someone to actually hit the ground running, he's probably the best we've seen since our transfer ban.
The impact that he's made in what, three games? Is that not what we've been asking from Enzo Fernandez since he came in?
Yeah, but that's also what you've been asking of Havertz, I think. Similar, tall, left.
We still
left
are. Havertz. That's what
but,
I mean.
But,
so.
That's, but that's my point.
And, it might be for a while.
And
we're going to get onto him because he changed the game. Here.
That's what again. That's what we thought we were getting with Havertz, and Cole Palmer's showing us what we thought we were buying, but 3 years down the line.
Let me say, if you put Havertz back in that Chelsea team and told him this is a position he's playing, he'd probably lick his lips. The issue was you didn't give him this position to play the whole time he was there.
I don't think he does the same job, though.
No.
We were talking through this via text. I'm sure we'll come on to Havertz after this. We'll save
yeah,
for
we
that.
Were, yeah.
But like you, when you said about aura, yes, an overword term.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
But if you just in isolation of the way they carry themselves on the pitch and things that they try and the conviction of which they do things, Cole Palmer's winning that hands down already. And he's, what, 5 years younger? 4 years younger? Something like that?
The,
I think the word aura is just reserved for Van Dijk, by the way. He's lost.
No, but maybe on that sort of tier of player. Someone close.
Yeah.
The,
well, our confidence in the word wouldn't come to my mind.
He has the air of air around him of someone that
basically
is,
I
could
meant,
be a cocky bastard yeah. if you weren't.
Basically, I meant I didn't think he was missing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The way he's assumed like creative sort of responsibility at Chelsea is impressive, but also he's kind of the only player of a slightly different sort of type that you bought. You did buy a collection of like midfielders, where you're like, okay, this is on paper a good midfield, but where's the creativity coming from? And he's obviously taking it upon himself to go, I'm happy to be that guy.
He seems to be the missing link, where we've always had a decent engine in the midfield with Gallagher, but it's when we get to the final third is when we struggle.
Mm.
Now it's break through that midfield like we did at Arsenal many times on Saturday, and then give it to Cole Palmer and see what. And then those runs from Mudrick and Sterling aren't aimless runs anymore. They're right, I might actually get sniffed, so I'm going to put effort into it. And that makes the whole team kind of gel a little bit better. Because before, it's get past the first part of midfield, and then it's just a ball to nowhere.
Shit, now what do we do?
So no one cares. No one's making those runs. No one's busting a gut.
I was right on the 7-4 stat, by the way. So
oh, nice.
Unfortunate for
I believed
Raheem.
You without the fact check. Yeah.
I think after the goal, we grew into the game a bit more. I'm not sure Zinchenko was finding space much more than Chelsea were happy to let him go. I think they were happy to stay touch tight on everyone else and back themselves to break it up and play Sterling in.
Yeah.
So I thought, let Zinchenko do what he wants. Hope he doesn't create anything more back us. And then this massive pocket of space that we can punt over the top.
Yeah.
Once he's on a booking especially, that looked like a matter of time.
100%. I think that was the game plan again of, so many times we don't get that luxury of us going 1-0 up and then exploiting space. I can't remember the last time we went up 1-0 up against a top six team.
Did you go 1-0 up against Liverpool? No, they went 1-0 up against you.
Yeah,
and we did there and
we're
thought,
always
yeah.
the chase.
Nearly two.
Yeah.
We're always the chasers. Just Liverpool were just kind enough to be able to allow us the same kind of space as if they were.
We are normally good for
1-0
that.
Down.
Give us that.
Yeah, but everyone else doesn't afford us that, and it did play into our hands a little bit with that where. We felt more comfortable. And that's when I talk about game plan and seeing the strategy. I saw us with everyone behind the ball, and I haven't seen that for so long. I've just sat there smiling.
Brought a tear to your eyes.
This is... And then
the Tuchel ban is back.
The phrase football purist came into my head again. Like, this is what football's all about. It's going 1-0 up and sitting back and hitting them on the break. That's
I think, football purist really does come to mind.
You mentioned strategy there, and as much as there were a few passes from Zinchenko, I was very happy to see Tomiyasu coming on at half time. And I think something that Arteta needs to get a gauge on this season is, to a lot of us, and I'm actually not sure this was a game for that, so I can't blame him too much. There's very clearly Tomiyasu games and Zinchenko games. City, he was very good at. That wouldn't have been the game that I would have played him there. But he needs to get this balance right. There's several games this season, I think Spurs, City, United, and now Chelsea, when the game's been tied or we've been losing, he's taken Zinchenko off of Tomiyasu, and then we've gone on to win or draw the game. And he has to get that balance right. Maybe he doesn't trust Tomiyasu to stay fit. I think he's been one of our most consistent players when he's played this season. The issue is usually when he gets the time to be the undisputed starter, he gets crocked, or he does something like that back pass to De Bruyne last season where everyone's like, why are you doing this?
Is there not a little bit of that? I appreciate part of that's on Arteta. Is that not a part of it is on Zinchenko to be more consistent. Can you not say to him, look, you're one of our top players, one of our senior players, you've got to be more consistent?
I think, for sure.
I know he is what he is to some extent.
I also think...
But nonetheless.
He doesn't seem to have... Him and Xhaka seemed to be seamless after about two games last season. We don't seem to decide who we want in that left central midfield spot, whether it's Declan Rice, whether it's Havertz, whether it's whoever it's going to be, Fabio Vieira. And he doesn't seem to strike up a partnership with anyone so far, mainly whether it's through trust, but then it's not stopping him getting forward. So I don't know. I think the fluidity needs to be there. This is the first time we've seen Jesus, Martinelli and Saka start together all season. And the midfield last season was the most consistent thing, so much so that when Partey was injured, it was a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we've got more options this season, but really the story of our season so far has been more options, but the fluidity isn't there. And we're kind of hoping it's going to click, but I don't know. There's a couple of things missing that he needs to figure out, obviously.
Yeah, not having a set midfield and then having... Yeah, you know, like you said, inconsistent performance. It's not a coincidence, is it? You
know, no, but then
last year you could name the team.
Yeah.
I know Arteta wanted more options, but there is such a thing as kind of the opposite way, where you need to know your best starting 11.
Constantly saying that in the face of that, we have played United, City, Spurs, Chelsea, and we're joint top of the league at this moment in time. I'd have got Partey on immediately too. He never did come on, so as I say, there obviously was something going on there. Second half I thought was actually poor from both sides. I thought Chelsea were a little unsure of what they wanted to do. I think really their best period of the game was before the penalty, and they should have got one, maybe two in there, but as you've complained about quite frequently, it's very good until you get to the edge of the area, and then it's like, what the hell do we do here? Palmer's unlucky with the one where he has Saliba and Gabriel crossing over and he fires just wide of the post because the keeper, like much of this game, has no clue what the hell is going on. For the second goal, the ball's nicked away from Ødegaard as a pass approaches him. Mudrik's found on the left-hand side, and to be honest, I was quite content because we'd slowed down a fast break. I'll ask you first here, wary that your answer may make me jump out the window. Regardless of what he says the coach told him, do you believe that this was intentional?
So there's a political answer to this. And the political answer is here. There is absolutely nothing to back up the fact that he went for goal.
Like, well, he claims that the goalkeeping coach told him.
I know that. But, okay. But what I meant is in his head, for sure. I'm sure he thinks he can make that shot. Anything he's done in a Chelsea shirt so far tells us otherwise, right? I am 100%... I reckon he's thought about it. But I don't think he's meant to do it. I think he thinks he can do it, but nothing he's done in the Chelsea shirt so far would... I can't snap anything to him and say, well, this is what he's done before. He must have meant it this time. So I'm going with a firm no. He didn't mean to do that.
Do you... Fair play to Poch, straight face saying what he said about it after the
did
game.
You, do you think if we drove him to Stamford Bridge now and we gave him five attempts to do it, and not just to get it, I'm sure he can score from there with the same technique, he could do that again. Because
like the float.
And a body in the goal.
Yeah. I think if we put dummies there and we give him 20 attempts, I'm not sure he's doing that again.
It was definitely a cross.
And the similarity is, if you remember...
I've never seen anyone shoot like that before.
Well, the game that saved Arteta's job, if you remember, we beat you 3-0 at home. Saka scores a similar one from, might be the same side of the pitch, but we were shooting the other way. Saka was immediately told, you didn't mean that. Now, he had more credit in the bank than Mudrik does, and he was universally told, there is no way you meant it, regardless of how much he said he did mean to do it.
The fact is his weaker foot as well, Mudrik. Like, I haven't seen him score much with his right foot.
So people are saying he looked up. Like, that means... Yeah. That means that's what you're
trying
to
rare
do.
Mudrik,
I think,
to be fair.
I think two things can be true. I think his subconscious made himself believe that he could do something like that.
The bloke struggles from 6 yards out.
Maybe it's just like muscle memory. Maybe he's just thought the devil on his shoulders told him to shoot. The angels told him to pass, and he's come somewhere in the middle, and it's just, if he'd shot, it would have gone over the bar. So that somewhere in the middle has worked for me on this occasion, I think.
I respected the hell out of the celebration, because that took some nerve. Also, when the game was all said and done, won me a lovely bet because I knew he was going to score pre-game. Nearly 4-1 on him to score any time tells you where that man is right
now. There's a reason for that, yeah.
Saying that, 2 goals in his last three?
Flying.
I wanted to read you something that was posted on The Athletic this morning, and you tell me if you agree, as I think it's just a howlet from David Wright, and I'll tell you what they said about it. Rea was way off his line, but he was only there because he's so aggressive, and indeed he's been told to be so aggressive in order to claim crosses. If Mudrick had crossed conventionally, as was the most likely outcome in that scenario, Rea would have been in an advantageous position to catch it. In being so proactive, he'll prevent more potential goals than he is let in by being a little further off his line than his standard. It also probably won't lead to many repeat performances. Few wingers of the Premier League will see that situation and think, I know, I'm going to chip him from this absurd angle, and even fewer will be successful. It's a bit like locking all your doors and putting the burglar alarm on, only for someone to accidentally crash into your house with a tank. You've done all that could reasonably be expected of you, but a freak incident ends up being bad news.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like a corner. So when he's on the rare occasion you see a corner go in.
So we're wrong to criticise the keeper here. Because that just does not feel right for me.
I think, to be fair, I can't see too much wrong with it. That shit happens sometimes. And file that under. We're sat here saying there is no way that Mudrick's got down his locker to do it. And you said, we'll drive him there. And we'll put dummies in the goal, give him 5 chances. He's not doing it with the same technique where it loops over the keeper. If that's a driven ball, Rea gets a hand to it. It's the fact that it's looped. The first time that it comes down below the bar is already about 5.
Should we not expect him to get back? Because we can see what's happening in real time. The issue is that he's short for a keeper. But I don't know. I'm not sure I can ever see that goal and not blame the keeper. If Kepa did that, I'd be cracking up. I was not cracking up.
Yeah. The keeper is always going to be blamed when something like that happens because it's freak. When something freak happens in the net, it's always the keeper's fault because it just is, because no one else can explain it. He can have had a bad game and been all over the shop and not be at fault with his goal.
Okay.
Both of those things can be true.
Yeah, I do wonder if that's sort of invading my sort of mind on it, because I don't know that I blamed him in real time.
No.
But then after the game, maybe I start looking at it because of the other stuff.
The thing is, because it's such a frustrating goal to concede, you are going to look for someone to blame. Like, I would be if the boot was on the other foot. So it has to be someone's fault. It can't just be an accident. But if you try and tell me that Mudrick's going to do that next week, and I'd tell you to fuck off, basically. I couldn't imagine anyone doing that again with that technique.
I guess there's a degree to go, though, as well, where you say, this freak thing happened, but the keeper bailed us out. Whereas, you know, and maybe on a different day, maybe Ryan would get to it, but
I think you stick most Premier League goalkeepers in the net for that, and most 9 times out of 10, I don't think any of them get it.
100%.
Because they would all have the same starting position. If you look at the way Mudrick's body angle is, this is why I don't think he meant it. It's because he's trying to whip the ball around into the net. So as a keeper, you have to try and preempt. So then he's been in an aggressive position, like it says in the Athletic article. That's why he stood there. 9 times out of 10, he'll come and affect an attacker not getting on the ball, and that freak won't happen again. You can tell it spoons a bit off his foot. It's just one of those.
He is massively unlucky.
But like I said, both things can be true. He didn't have a great game, but I don't think he was at fault for that particular goal.
At this point, it was damage limitation for me because I thought we were going to get put to the sword.
I was hoping for the same.
Yeah, Rea had been dodgy for the majority of this game. The one he passes straight to Cole Palmer, that Cole Palmer should have done better with, to be honest.
I mean, that's probably the finisher.
It was a tale of two dodgy passes. Yeah,
remember, Vicario lost it to Jesus in the Spurs game, and then doesn't score, and they come back and draw. Yeah, I was thinking that they took the lead, but no. Jorginho. Before we discuss the comeback, there's been some desire to run prop for Cucurella on my timeline. In fact, I saw one writer refer to this as the Cuckoo Renaissance, which left me feeling so, so sick. I thought he was doing a good job on a half-fit Saka, but he's also every time he plays him, he boots him off the pitch, and it's like he gets 3 free passes. He got fortunate that there was 2 where the ref blew an advantage or he was waiting for something, and so he basically got like a free play on Saka and he booted him twice. And then he gets one back, and you've never seen a bloke so shocked that he's been tackled before. I thought he had a good game. Some of the takes I was seeing of Kukure, he's back. He was never as bad as he was being sold as being.
No, he was. This was his best game in a Chelsea shirt.
Not much competition.
That Dortmund game exactly. in the Champions League, come on.
I'd still say he was bad against Saka to keep him as quiet as he did, because
although he's the reason that Saka gets the cross in for the second goal.
I know, and that's why I'm not going too mental about Kukure.
That cannot be his best game.
It was. And that's
I thought he had a couple of good ones to start. I thought we had it right at the start.
He was being chucked a centre back.
That was his best defensive game for us.
Okay.
When we've had some of the ball, he was all right when he started, but he was getting his name sung at the bridge. I couldn't believe it.
I think he's the best left back you've got.
Better than Chile.
Better than Chile. Not a chance. I'd agree to disagree on that one, because I'm sure we're going to disagree about a lot down the line.
We're going to talk about one of the other fullbacks a little later on, because that man came on the pitch and I won't spoil what happened next. Let's discuss the goals. I don't need to tell you where the equaliser comes from. I complained on it.
This is what we're talking about. When you said comeback, we gifted you this.
I've seen this way of looking at it, we were lucky that the keeper let us back into it. Wait, like David Raya hasn't been.
No,
he tried.
No, but you've had one shot. That was your first shot on target all game. And we gave it and you an open net to shoot at, essentially.
But
it was a great finish.
I mean, if we're going by that, in the first half, you had one shot on target. And this was supposedly a period of domination.
Yeah, but we also had more of the attacking impetus. You'd created nothing, you'd done nothing, and we gift-wrapped you way back into the game.
I think it's the worst display we've had in years, but it was also the best you've had in years, which is that's where it gets a bit spooky. I complained on it to TK a fortnight or so ago when I said that Raya gave Lens a way back into our Champions League tie that they never looked like getting. I don't know if you like the pronunciation there. I was no longer even sat up straight at this point in the game, let alone raising my voice at the TV when Sanchez, I don't know what he's doing. Rice is his worst performance so far in an Arsenal shirt, still has the instinct to sniff out that goal, put his mark on the game. I don't know who he's passing to.
So, one, that, and two, when you can quite clearly see it's not going to anyone, he's still stood. Like 5 yards outside.
Yeah, how long did he need to get back?
There's another man that needs to be called into question here.
What, Enzo?
The podgy Argentinian.
You're not blaming Enzo.
No, he can't, he's tiny.
He's got to close Rice down better than that.
I don't think anyone's expecting that.
It's such a bad pass.
For
example, right, if you're playing out from the back and you're playing it with some kind of fizz or something like that, that is a training ball. You know when you watch them in the stadium beforehand where it's rolled out to them at a pedestrian pace where they just smash it top bins every time? And you think, why can't you do that in a fucking game? Because it wasn't even fizzed. It was just a wandering ball through our final third that no one knew who it was for. I guess everyone was stood around not reacting to it because they thought, oh, a ball that light, it must be meant for someone that isn't me. And then you could see them all realise at the same time that, oh, hang on a minute, that's to no one. And then Robert Sanchez, still can't even get his name on because he's that
bad. My agenda was there early on him.
He's about 5 yards outside of his six-yard box. He can see it's not going to anyone, and he's still stood there. If he reacts a second quicker, he gives himself at least a chance of saving the shot. Now, it was a brilliant finish, right in the far corner.
Right in the corner.
So if he does get back, I don't know. But it was a very savable height. But I just can't understand where you've made a mistake there. Why are you not just trying to get back to the centre of the goal? That's the first thing that you do.
I'm so angry. I hope
this guy.
I hope the Spanish coach wasn't at the game, because these are two guys that want to overtake Unai Simon.
I'd rather have Kepa back.
Jesus.
I've just had a shudder. David Raya down with that.
Kepa is so used to making these mistakes that he knows how to rectify them quicker.
So
the concern for Sanchez is that he knows he's getting worse. I actually thought he started his Chelsea career actually okay. Well, I watched first game, claims every cross, thought he's more dominant than I've remembered him being. You know what? Byron was chatting shit. He's actually a really good keeper. Better than the one they got. And now he's getting worse.
And now we don't even have a backup
keeper. I don't know the Raya's that much better, but he's still better than him because he looks like he's getting...
I feel like you were high on Raya till he joined Arsenal.
I'd have David De Gea back.
I think... Look,
I'd have David De Gea in
the You signed a Brighton keeper, you signed a Brentford keeper, and you thought you were getting... I don't know. You thought you were getting steak and you got a burger. That's all right. There's nothing wrong with a burger. It's fine.
I'm not sure. It doesn't always work.
We've got nothing.
He started this shtick with Sadio Mane and it went wrong. And he's had to keep this going.
What shtick?
They signed a Southampton winger. And so, you know, I don't want my money going in that direction. It didn't work with Mane.
It didn't work with Ricky Lambert. So I was just so traumatised by Southampton players.
The Beetroot Factory backstory just didn't sell it enough.
I love the fact that me suggesting Raya and Sanchez may not work out is seen as controversial. He's like, what are you seeing here, TK? Because I can't get it. I can't get my head around it.
I mean, I questioned it.
We can say it.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
I'm just
I want Ramsdale back in, but...
I'm just so used to seeing horror show keepers between the sticks for Chelsea now that it's just normal.
It's like the first Ramsdale mistake is not going to be good. And it's coming. It's going to be there at some point.
The first Ramsdale mistake.
When he gets back in and he's been built up to a certain point and then he makes a mistake and Arteta goes, aha!
Disgusting from Mikel.
To go back to the goal.
Yeah.
Like, that is the only way that you got back into the game. You said it yourself. You're led down. You're not even raising your voice at the TV anymore. 76 minutes in. The Arsenal players haven't had a sniff. They're probably just waiting for the game to end. We game manage it properly. That freak doesn't happen. Another goal goes in 5 minutes to go and you never know, we may see it out. As soon as that goal went in, the whole stadium knew. The energy just, it's like a vacuum just got sucked straight out.
At this point in the game, I needed Ben White to be booked for 110 quid. And I'm saying, get the ball down that side. Get the ball down. And they wouldn't. They refused to. And so he just booted someone for no reason.
That was good of him.
Was fantastic. Yeah, the finish, I think, I didn't realise how good it was until there's the angle from behind the goal where he's had to bend it around Enzo and it does go pure side netting. I do still think Enzo has to put his body on the line for that, because if that's Conor Gallagher, he's getting dragged in all the punditry post-game for not throwing himself at it, for not charging the ball down faster, for not sniffing the game out faster. For a midfielder that costs that much, I think you saw a difference in the urgency from Declan Rice and Enzo. And they're different players for sure. Enzo spoke about how he likes to model the game on Declan Rice. So maybe we should have paid some more money for him. But I don't know. One of them grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. One of them...
Hang on.
If Declan Rice isn't grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck...
Absolutely anonymous. He's a great shot.
So he's had a shite performance and he's still dragged us forward.
That's not dragging the game by the scruff of the neck. That's a pot shot from 30 yards because the keeper's not in the net.
Pot shot? I don't think Enzo scores that.
I was surprised Declan scored.
He puts some fluffy chip on it, Enzo does.
I'm not having this grabbing the game by the scruff. There's Gerrard. There's... Beckham,
I'm glad
versus,
you mentioned Gerrard.
There's Beckham
because
Greece. There's Gerrard.
Gerrard would have.
I'm a sucker for the throwing your hands up as you go back to the centre circle. I'm loving that. And in the rain, Mr. Baz Matty's loving that. If that's not grabbing the game by the scruff of the net, I don't know what it is. He kept trying.
He got the ball handed to him, gift wrapped. And the keeper then still didn't decide to get in his net and he had a whole free goal.
How many other players on the pitch score that?
You're asking me how many professional footballers from 25 yards can hit an open net?
I think it's the technique. I think it's the bending it around the player.
I think that's good in isolation. That's a fantastic feat of skill. I don't think that's grabbing the game by the scruff of the net.
Declan Rice is the most technically gifted player on that pitch? Is that what you said?
I think...
I wouldn't put him that high.
Degree angle.
I think half the players don't have the dog to take the shot on.
Mudrick.
If you give it a free goal, if they don't have the dog to take on a punt at that point.
If that's what you're basing this off, then Mudrick grabbed this game by the scruff of his neck more than Declan Rice did, because he won the penalty and he chipped the keeper from a stupid angle. If that's the way I want to sell it.
Does Caicedo score that?
Yeah.
No, he doesn't.
Okay, no, he doesn't. But that, I'm still not claiming.
I can see he was thinking of a player there. Just saying, I think I've got a name one now.
I maintain I don't think Enzo. I've never seen Enzo do anything with that much conviction since he joined Chelsea.
I don't think Enzo can hit a ball from 4 yards out. I think...
Can't hit an empty goal from that
turning on Enzo, let me just...
Anyway.
Okay, yeah, let's...
The point being...
We've still got another goal to get on to.
Oh, joy. I'll just end it there.
I do think some players take a touch there, whether it's cowardly, whether it's just wanting to miss the open. Yeah, I don't know.
That's it, right? The fact that he didn't take a touch, that's what...
I actually think not having much time helped Declan. Yeah. I think the fact that he hit it...
You call him Jovinia?
Yeah, I think that part of his game isn't the most natural, and so I think that probably helped.
No, but I also think, if you're looking for character that puts itself on the piece of paper, that's a late goal against United and that's a goal against Chelsea when we need it.
Yeah,
fair enough. Great in isolation, but then Anonymous completely dogged by Gallagher for the whole game.
Bad keepers there as well.
There's a reason Gallagher's on the other side. Ødegaard, if you want to get onto him after this game, half the Arsenal fan base has. I can't believe my eyes. Sanchez, and one of the things here, that chance late from Eddie. That man did not know what the hell was going. See how calm he was as the ball nearly goes in at the far post.
He knew.
So you get to this point, and again, I'm not saying I've been ever in that kind of position, but as a keeper, you've made a mistake, and then you just pray in the ball.
It's in God's hands.
Comes nowhere near you.
How?
So you then try and do everything like that's not going in, when you have no idea whether it is or it isn't.
How long did the moment feel before Rice gets to the ball? And the goal is still open.
Right. We saw the ball rolling out and we saw where Sanchez was. We all knew it was a goal. It actually looks a better goal from the TV. From where we saw it, it was just someone stroking it into an empty net.
Yeah.
But
I assume something had gone wrong by the reaction. Gary Neville. Oh, no.
But it was like a second pass, but we knew it was a goal before he'd even taken a shot.
Do you think he was a keeper when he was younger or something? He seems to have real trauma with goalkeepers playing badly, Neville.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to revel in it. He seems genuinely uncomfortable when it's happening. This highlighted as much as anything that Chelsea have spent £1 billion, but when it comes to putting the ball in the net or keeping it out, they've gone remarkably cheap in both positions by comparison. Our subs here, Trossard for Martinelli was interesting. I thought Martinelli was our best outlet at the time. Smith Rowe on for Jorginho is maybe a sign that he's earning back some trust. I think merely that type of player changed the game somewhat more than his performance did, because I thought his passing left a lot to be desired. Havertz on for Jesus was the right move. It's not looked explosive the last couple of games, Jesus.
I thought he was disgusted in this game.
He looks like he's lost some physicality since his injury, and so when he can stand you up and he can do the tricks and the turns, he's still Mr. Box Office, but he doesn't seem to back into defenders in the same way that he was pre-injury, and hopefully that comes back. It's only his first start since injury.
That's one of the easiest rides I've seen from our centre-backs from pretty much all the games.
It was a terrible performance bar 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought... You know, you said about your fans getting onto Odegaard. I thought Jesus is maybe lucky that Odegaard did have a stinker, because I just thought he offered nothing, which whatever you might say about him, you wouldn't normally say that. He's normally a nuisance.
I wasn't angry seeing Eddie coming on, which I have been.
You normally are.
Havertz, I actually thought, was very good. And again, I don't think he's going to start Tuesday. I think severe away, tough game. Just beating Madrid, I believe, but intimidating away from home, I don't think he's going to change too much. I'm pretty sure Raya will still be in. So Saturday is the question, though. Havertz might be deserving of a start for me, and then see what you can do. Some big, burly Sheffield centre-backs. The actual goal is a beauty. Ben White, with his interesting new trim, takes out three players with one pass inside to Havertz, plays it back to him, then onto Saka. That cross is so nice from Saka.
Magic.
And you can keep him as quiet as you want, and he still has that in the locker. Last player I said this about was Ødegaard, and he's had some bad form. He's developing a certain inevitability that I can see Salah have a shit 89 minutes, and in the 90th, he's going to get his goal or he's going to get his assist or whatever.
So early that day.
United, we had it this season where Saka was quiet and then he gets the assist late on for Declan Rice. He's just the numbers, if the performances aren't there, the numbers are still there and you can't complain when that's happening. Interesting that Mudryk and Trossard are two of the players to score when it was such a sign of the direction our January's went.
It's a nice finish as well.
So
it's not an easy finish.
I was going to ask about this. Trossard,
as great as the ball is.
Trossard only scores big goals was the first thing I was going to say. Nice finish. Does Sanchez have to save it? As it's the only place it can go, is it not?
No.
For Trossard?
The fact that it's even there, it goes through his arm.
You think he should stop the cross before it gets to Trossard?
No. The shot. Basically,
he'll smother Trossard before.
Yes. Because it's... Right, if you look at his starting position, and this is what I was coming into before, where you drop an absolute clanger, and then you watch that Eddie one go past the post... And you had no idea. And it, like I said, in God's hands kind of thing. You're just praying the ball comes nowhere near you.
That moment did go in slow-mo, that edit shot. Yeah. I was thinking about crawling towards the back post.
It looked close, and I thought, what's going on here? Yeah.
If you look at the replay of the Trossard goal, if you look at Sanchez's starting position, he's got his foot over the line. He's in his own net, right? Which is never a good look for a keeper. And you'd never... Because if you save it and you're there, it's a goal. You're told to just stay away from there as quickly as possible. What he should do... he should know that he's not going to get the cross because it is a great cross and you go out and you smother the ball at source. That's all you do. And
my question to you on that though is, do you think he sees Trossard there? Because I think
he
Trossard,
should.
I don't know who the fullback is that's supposed to be marking Trossard.
It's Gusto that loses his man.
Is James not on by that point?
Yeah, he's playing in midfield.
Oh, Jesus. That might be where you went wrong.
So he played him in right centre mid and kept Gusto on.
What the hell kind of decision making is that? You're overwhelming us with athleticism in midfield and you bring on a guy that's got the strength of a wet paper bag. Reece James.
Oh, wow.
Reece James, you're over Paris in the midfield and you bring on Reece James. Is Reece James going to do any of what you were doing in midfield to that extent? The bloke snaps if you put in half a challenge on him.
He's a very physical player, but he gets injured, but his actual presence on the pitch, he's probably our hardest player.
That's not a good sign.
It's not really hard.
120 million DM in there.
Anyway.
Hang on. Caicedo can't score for an open goal. and he's weak in a Reece James.
Coming back to the actual goal.
I just wanted to get on Reece James.
Yeah, I know you did. And I'm not allowing you opportunity.
Centre mid, though, that is.
That's where he's playing.
That is.
The last 10 minutes. That's trying to see out.
That's a weird corner.
I don't think so, because I think Gusto. Reece James. This is rushed back for Reece James. We don't want him running up and down that line to be his first introduction to football since the first game of the season.
I just wouldn't bring him on then.
I mean, I did question it a little bit, but I then also thought, in midfield, pack it out, bit of physicality. He probably came on to combat Havertz, if I'm honest, because they knew they were going to pump the ball up to him and he would be able to just try and battle with him in midfield and keep him out of the front line. What they didn't want him doing... was sprinting up and down the touchline, which is why they kept Gusto there, I think.
That one Havertz is penalised for late made me as angry as anything in the entire game, where he just jumps up, and because Cucurella is vertically challenged and he's a foot smaller than him, he's penalised for his arms are by his side and it touches Cucurella and he gives a foul. If they score from this,
the old crouching
foul. I was going to be livid.
But yeah, coming back to the goal, Sanchez should be seeing that danger. As a keeper, you scan the pitch in front of you and you are the person directing your defenders. If there's a crossing on the side, you're screaming, telling them where they're coming in from. You're the general of your penalty area. You need to know.
It feels to me like the thing he said about Raya could be applied to his own keeper. What he said, just because he had a bad game generally, don't blame him for this one mistake.
No, because
only because of the speed of the ball from Saka wherever it goes off, that's going to be difficult to deal with.
It's a fantastic...
And the control from the finish and Trossard.
But you would still back your keeper when you're that close in distance. How many times do we see Onana have stinkers? But when a ball's hit straight at him, he will save it.
Right? No, that is not always true.
No. But no, when they've got no time...
If he did that a little bit more, they wouldn't be talking about getting down with their head back in.
But this is straight at him in his starting position. He's inside his net. So he's left himself nowhere to go.
I will confess, I hadn't realised he was starting inside his own net. I hadn't realised that.
That's
but
what,
I didn't watch it and go, well, oh, keeper, what are you doing?
No, on the replays when I said, he should have saved it, but I wasn't this like this. It was just a question.
I love the control of the finish from Trossard, because that can bounce and you know, go anywhere off him. Because of the speed of the ball for a second where it bounces.
We get that chance and we don't score it. Put it that way.
Every time I get...
Madrid might do it by accident.
I think Trossard is another where when he's bad, I think if you can keep him deeper on the pitch than I've said before his inefficiencies as a winger. Every time I get to see him play properly, he is one of them that I just love watching. If we could do anything and say none of you are working in this position we're trying to make Havertz do, Declan, you're going to have a tougher job here, but we're playing Trossard there in the middle of the pitch. I think it would be, he could be the new Mr. Box Office.
Now I would go a bit more with that as well than your original Mr.
Now,
Box Office.
I said a couple of weeks back that until further notice, we should stop playing North London Forever pre-game because the players are just getting too hyped. It's doing whatever we need to do and we're just chucking goals in. Now, it didn't work against City. If I'm Chelsea and a game is being played under the lights, should you ensure that the away team can't attack that corner in the second half? Has any late winner at Stamford Bridge not been celebrated in that one corner?
We always, because we shoot towards Matthew Harden. That's so for our second half. We want to attack Matthew Harden.
So I'm saying you need to stop.
But the problem is, we don't want to attack that end because, for whatever reason, when they switch it round, we're awful attacking the shed end. So
but there's so many iconic celebrations in that one corner of Stamford Bridge.
The away end used to be, and this is pre-Roman, they moved it after Roman to fit the hospitality in. It used to be in the east end. But I've always wondered why the hell we have it there because it gives such an impetus players to attack their own fans. I guess you could say the same at the Emirates, though, right? It's in a corner. It's just that it's much further away from.
Pretty much every stadium fits this bill, other than St James's, where they go, "You're going fucking up there."
Yeah.
it just seems very specifically. You see so many celebration pictures of that one specific.
It's because
corner
it's so close to the pitch. Because it's one of the older stadiums now, Stamford Bridge. You are so close to the pitch. At the Tottenham Stadium, you're right close to the pitch. Plus, as well, it makes for great viewing because when the camera pans down on Sky, everything is in such close proximity to the stand. So it's just
tells you a lot about his attitude there as well. Chelsea are going with the approach that this is where we want to shoot in the second half. And he's going, well, look, it might go the other way. The other team might score. So maybe think about what they're doing.
Maybe
be telling Liverpool, don't shoot at a cop end second half. Yeah. The other team might score.
Our players...
It's the same with same Anfield.
Look, it is the same most gaffes. Yeah.
No, it wasn't even just specifically the fans being there. It just seems something. There's like some
hoodoo
in that corner
of the bridge.
Our players enjoyed that equaliser. I saw back the footage of when United equalised against you late at the bridge last season, where Casemiro is like screaming like it's Jesus. Our players look dejected at full time. In closing here, because I genuinely didn't think we'd spend that long on this game, but keepers and all sorts.
You should have had a penalty. I can't believe you haven't mentioned it.
Well, we're there. We're nearly there. Did you boo Havertz?
No.
I don't know why people did boo Havertz. They wanted him gone.
Yeah, like...
And then he won you the Champions League.
He got 60 million.
Yeah, it's not a Mount situation where we feel snaked because he's been there since he was 5. He came in from another country. He won us the Champions League. I didn't boo him. I was quite happy to see him go and just shake hands. It didn't quite work. Wish you all the best. I know it's to Arsenal.
And it's not even like he's cooking at the moment where you can be resentful.
No, exactly. I know it's to Arsenal. He's been respectful. Like, he hasn't come out and said horrible things about Chelsea and all that kind of stuff. I didn't get it. I thought it was very kind of just typical don't go very often kind of people doing it.
I saw a Chelsea fan on Twitter in the week where people were discussing whether to boo Havertz or not. And one of them said, people say he won us the Champions League. He scored one goal in the whole competition that year. It just happened to be the final.
I don't care.
Eddie can score in the final. It could have been Lekonga.
Petr Cech would all have been forgiven if Petr Cech.
If Petr Cech scored for us in the Champions League final, then I might have tolerated the bloke.
You'd have sewn a
I would not have booed
onto
him. If I saw that man in the street now, I would boo him. Did you boo Jorginho?
Nah. It's not worth it.
Can be asked.
Again,
if I was at that Spurs game,
again,
I'd have booed
Jorginho. These are two players they were happy to say goodbye to. We were complaining about them every week, not doing what we needed them to do. Someone came along and gave us stupid money for one of them. And it was like, okay, well, we got our money back, pretty much. We'll tip our hats, and that's that. I don't get why people
All right, let's go through these weird, yeah. these reflections. My mildly hot take is that I don't think Chelsea were that good. I think in the game, it felt good. When I reflected upon the whole thing, and I thought, okay, other than the freak goal and a penalty, there was one time where I felt that we were particularly under pressure. Nicholas Jackson, that man's reputation already is that I saw him one-on-one with the keeper and just did not bat an eyelid that I thought...
to the keeper that has been dropping howlers all games, he was right in front of us and he just walks it into David Raya's hands.
Yeah, I thought you had a good 30, and I thought it was as much about the standards we've set in recent times, the standards you've set in recent times, and the way they both kind of matched up with each other that said most of it, because in the cold light of day, you didn't really do a lot.
No, but I don't think we needed to.
It just looked nice.
I didn't think we needed to, and when you actually see when we scored our goals...
You did need to.
Well, no, because when you... usually, a 2-0 lead with 15 minutes left is enough to see you through at home.
Not against the arse.
Well, not with David... with fucking Sanchez or whatever the fucking name is.
Is there a David Sanchez, or are you thinking Davinson Sanchez and Robert Sanchez?
Fair,
Robert
if you Sanchez. Have a howler of a game and you think of Davinson Sanchez, yeah, I can see the correlation.
Every goal would be fantastic. Yeah.
Look, I think...
Is he going to be worse than one pitch?
I think we play perfectly. I think we...
Perfectly? I can see a couple of flaws.
Apart from the two key instances that we've spoken about, I think we nullified your threat. We didn't look under threat until we gave you something for us to worry about. We obviously aren't at the pinnacle of anywhere close to where we need to be. But for where we are, to manage a game, get to 76 minutes, 2-0 up against top of the league with how you've performed last season and this season.
I'm just going to tell you, there's going to be a Spurs fan somewhere saying, they aren't top of the league.
But you get my point.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
To have managed a game to that point, and the fact I've come out of like the two cup finals against Liverpool away from the stadium, not that gutted because it's penalties is what it is. 2-0 loss against Real Madrid last year in the Champions League. That's the most deflated I've ever been leaving a football stadium in my whole time of going.
The roar I let out at 2-2.
Yeah.
Neighbours would not have been happy.
I've never been so utterly deflated. So I didn't want to even tell you that because I know what kick that would give you. But that's how well we played, how we opposed ourselves, and just to have thrown it away from two stupid preventable incidents was just ridiculous.
At 2-2, how convinced were you that we were getting a winner?
Like, almost
100%. Two more minutes, I think we get one.
Yeah,
because there's a point of 2-2 where I think we said, "Now let's win it," and the Chelsea players said, "We can't fucking lose this now.
Yeah.
We cannot lose this now." Rather than... They said just before on commentary, you won't have heard this, they said the last time that Chelsea beat Arsenal, they actually surrendered a two-goal lead and then got a late winner through Azpilicueta, which I remember vividly. And this was at 2-0. And then we get the two, and I text my uncle saying, I really wish they hadn't just said that. How on earth do Arsenal not get a penalty from Sanchez wiping out Jesus?
Done that twice.
How little attention they gave it in the moment.
I
thought I was going mental.
He got penalised for the same thing, for a lesser foul against Brighton in the League Cup.
Let me tell you about 4 men of a minute.
Yeah. So let me tell you why VAR say... VAR say the difference between this and the Onana one is that Sanchez has a chance to win the ball. He doesn't, but because the ball was there, it's not an error. It also is taken into account that he does take out more of his own men than Arsenal players.
So if you batter one of your own defenders into someone else...
They say... If you break someone's leg with a knee-high challenge, but the ball was there to be won.
They say the reason they issued an apology in the United game was that Onana knew he couldn't reach the ball and still dragged down a Wolves player anyway. Because the ball was there and Sanchez is challenging for it, that's why VAR wouldn't intervene.
Now, I'm usually goalkeeper's union when it comes to this, but he comes out with such force.
One of the people that's, you know, ITK and on Twitter says, the audio for this is bad. They say you will not be hearing the audio of this one.
So, Arsenal should come up and publicly request it. Tell them.
But this is my point when we talk about David... fucking hell. Just Sanchez.
Maybe just give it a Sanchez, yeah.
Just...
in his defence, they had a lot of players, that, right? Give him a break.
Bastard.
Rio Ferdinand kept referring to Ashley Young as Ashley Cole on Saturday, so it's not quite that bad. All broadcast. Yeah. All broadcast.
But he gives away the first goal, which gives you the complete impetus to go on and then draw level. He should have been penalised and been given away a penalty. And I think he should do a lot better for the third, the equaliser. He cost us that entire game for one man. He undid 10 other players' work.
TK, is Palmer lucky to stay on the pitch?
I didn't even know this was a thing because it wasn't shown on Match of the Day and I didn't
could
see
not
it.
Believe it
and I couldn't see it in real time, so I'm going.
Yeah,
I'm
there wasn't. I thought it probably deserved a little bit more focus on it than it was because there was basically none. But I think.
I don't think it was a red.
I think he's okay. I think it's all right.
According to VAR, not enough force and the leg didn't bend enough to force a red. So.
That's always such a weird.
This bendy leg thing is coming out.
For a thing to actually be like in writing, it seems so odd. So I think I'm close enough to breaking your leg for me.
I said to Jack just before you arrived is we keep hearing about orange cards and the issue is none of them seem to be tipping over to the red side. And that's usually you hear, you know, some of them go to the red, some of them are yellow.
You expect like a half and
they don't
split
seem
almost,
to be working that way. I actually thought they may give us one after the Kovacic thing. I thought we've seen that in other games and sometimes it goes that way. How many of the next five games does Aaron Ramsdale start for Arsenal?
Are you going to tell me what games you've got?
Seville.
Are any of them a League Cup game?
Maybe. Yeah,
if there's a League Cup game, one.
It's League Cup in 2 weeks, I think.
West Ham away.
He isn't playing, other than that, I don't think. And Ryan's going to have to do something horrible.
Severe away.
I mean, is that game not horrible enough, do you reckon?
I'll tell you, it's to the guy. Yeah. You can tell me you've got two number ones all you want. Your actions tell me something different.
So he actually wasn't there on Saturday because his wife was giving birth.
Yeah.
Severe away, Sheffield at home, West Ham away in the League Cup, Newcastle away, Seville at home.
Yeah, he'll play the West Ham game. He'll play the League Cup game, that's it, I think.
If he doesn't get to play one Champions League game, I'm going to be so upset.
I imagine he'll be a little disappointed.
I think
you've got to try and win your games early so he can have the garbage games at the end of the group.
Because he lost to Lyon, I think. Yeah, I don't think he's going to get.
Maybe it's intentional from Raya. Yeah. If I'm playing all these games, fuck you.
I don't think Seville away is going well. I'll put that on the record early doors.
Not easy.
Did you see Arteta's reaction to being told that Mudryk claimed he meant it? No. Is told by one of them proper like snotty journalists on Bein Sports, the woman that does it.
Okay.
And she was giving these really long-winded answers. And she said, I don't know if you've heard, Mikhailo Mudryk has actually come out and said he did mean it. He said that his goalkeeping coach told him that Raya comes out from his box a lot and so to try and chip the keeper. And he says, oh, he meant it. Fantastic. I mean, I've seen him play several times I've not seen, but, you know, congratulations to him. I mean, very good.
Nothing like a passive-aggressive answer.
He was on one in that interview, like start to finish. He keeps saying, do you think it should be a red? And he's like, we'll move on now.
Nice.
I think I've asked everything else, yeah. If I was a man interested in agendas, I'd say Reece James came on and Chelsea conceded two. Havertz came on and we scored two, but I'm not interested in agendas, so we'll move on. The most one-sided derby in England went the same way it always does this weekend. DCL, my guy, had a chance early. The fact so much was made of that chance early told me the commentators felt the same way about this game as everyone else did. Because it's a good chance. It's not a, he's got to
exactly.
Be doing better with that.
Yeah, and that early as well. And you're going, for when I could be the game.
Everton defended well. For the most part, I thought, or did you put this down more to Liverpool attacking poorly, early on at least?
A little bit like Arsenal fell into, I thought we just had a bit of a pedestrian pace to us. And you can easily, if you don't break that in the first half hour or so, can easily fall into that. It's hard to break the pattern. Even a team like us, it happened a lot last year. And then once they go down to 10 men as well, and they just sit in, you've just got two teams that, they're only interested in defending, and we're a little bit one-paced still.
Do you think Klopp's...
It was a horrible game. Horrible on the early.
Klopp's made it a bit of a boo-hoo issue for his players with the 12:30 kickoffs, because every time now, and you're playing City in a 12:30 kickoff, I won't forget the false hope you gave me in that regard last season.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Do you think, because he did make such a thing of it, that your players might be a bit, 12:30 kickoff again?
I think whenever managers go on so much about fatigue and stuff, I always think it's a dangerous game they're playing, because I think you're setting it in, you're giving players excuses, and they're not necessarily even consciously thinking that, but I just think subconsciously it's not quite going your way. That must seep in, that he's telling you you're tired. We stank for a large part of this game. We were horrible for the first half of the Wolves game early in the season and an early kickoff. So,
well, and then they moved the City one so they can have Arsenal Brentford as a late kickoff as well. I don't know if it's to do with the police or it's something, but that's our game moved meant yours shifted. It wasn't that they chose to have Liverpool as the 12:30.
I mean, in a backward way, they have them by doing that, haven't they? So it's
and Klopp
doesn't help his argument. Which
I remember Klopp being a lot more positive, like years gone by. He seems to have got grumpier and grumpier as the years.
He's definitely so, but he's more chipper than he was last year.
I think someone said that by the end of the year, Liverpool will have played every 12:30 slot after an international break.
Yeah, and the numbers are. I get managers doing what they do, but I normally sort of roll my eyes a little bit at some of it, even from Klopp. But the numbers don't look good in terms of how many we've had from internationals compared to the other teams. I think we're something like, it's like 12 or 14, and the next one is like Spurs with 5 since Klopp's been.
But the issue is that because we
get... there's so many where it's like, the numbers are a bit skewed, even if you've got, someone has to have the most, so I don't dispute that. But it's so like, but by the way, if you were in that job, probably not many perks to the job. If you heard someone bitching and moaning, you'd probably go, yeah, fuck it, stick them in the early one.
Also, because...
probably not the most entertaining job in the world. You go, fuck Liverpool over.
Because the broadcasters...
do something to liven up the office.
Because the broadcasters have so much power, we all complain about watching City and City being on TV.
Oh, God.
At least the way that Liverpool were billed coming into the season, I do think there's an element of your game that we thought coming in, maybe not quite to the extent that we thought it was going to be, with you being calamitous at the back and just scoring shitloads of goals. Then you're primed for a TV slot. And
for sure. Here we go, there's other TV slots. It would be his argument, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but so TNT are going to be the ones saying, you know, we...
And after like every international break, apart from anything, if you were organising the fixtures, you'd go, well, don't give him an excuse to dog us. Don't give him an excuse to go, they're against us or whatever.
I guess the thing is as well, at Merseyside Derby, the fact that there was one game yesterday... I don't understand why that couldn't have got the 4:30 Sunday slot if they really wanted it to. There's one. Am I right in thinking Villa West Ham was the only game yesterday? But so there was a free TV slot yesterday.
Yeah.
So because they have Spurs today, that seems to be the way they're doing it now.
They're having a shocker with the scheduling anyway, though.
Well, you know. So we're on Liverpool, but I do want to ask you this: if you can get tickets, will you be going? It looks like Chelsea are going to play Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I saw that.
Will you? If Wolves isn't far, will you be getting a pass for that, that or
I don't know.
That face told me nothing. That told me I got no chance.
After missing, inverted commas, the last train home on Saturday, I don't think I'll be getting a pass for the Christmas Eve game, no.
You've played yourself.
My track record
you were just doing the inverted commas there, just off the mic, like Sarah might be tuning in.
No, I can't.
To hear us break down the Merseyside derby.
You know what? I've just
back to this game then. So, the Ashley Young red card, we mentioned it. Is anyone doubting the validity of it? I thought they were two pretty blatant bookings.
Yeah, 100%.
Couldn't believe you went in for the second challenge.
Like, on a
it's
yellow.
It's pretty obvious what Diaz is doing.
Yeah, and like with all of his experience, you can see Diaz keeping the ball far away from him as possible. Like, you're going to have to come through me to get this. And Ashley was like, yeah, right?
yeah. All right, well. And he's kind of asking, like, look, just shepherd me out and I'll get a corner off you or whatever. And then just he goes, nah, have a pen.
I think next international break, we're going to rate the top 10 wingers in the league right now. And just don't give me an answer. If I asked you to rate right now Rashford, Martinelli and Diaz in order, would you find that easy or not?
I don't know, easy, but okay. Easier than some would like me to find that, probably. Okay.
Yeah, I thought that he gave me a look initially like it was the way I would like it to go, and then the grin told me not the way that I would like it to go.
I said yes. Matt said
I think it probably, in the cold light of day, probably would go the way you want it to go, but I'll like to keep you on edge.
The only question I have is that a fortnight ago, we were told that referees wanted to feel the spirit of the game and not ruin it. So I don't really know what changed in that time frame.
Yeah, I don't think we can take what they say as gospel. I think we're learning that.
The commentators seem to say, you know, Deitch has set his stall out here with the changes. I think we knew which way Deitch was going before he took off Harrison and McNeil for Patterson and Michael Keane.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working, to be fair.
Yeah, we weren't really creating anything. We weren't getting much joy.
I thought, and I don't like the bloke, I thought Deitch's post-game interview is about as fair as you'll probably find from a losing manager this season.
Yeah. I mean, he was pretty spot on.
How do you not like Sean Deitch?
I think he's just a massive prick, mainly.
Wow. I don't know. Outside of anyone that I actually care about, he's the one I'd probably tune into to watch his...
I can enjoy what I can enjoy parts of his game maybe, but for the most part
I don't like the way he sets his teams up, but I do like him as a bloke.
The football purist doesn't like the way he sets his teams up. I'm shocked.
I think the point where I was done with him was his thing of why is everyone making a big deal that I went outside in just a shirt as he stands in front of the cameras staring them down in the snow.
Having just what, like a week before, done a press conference where he's talking about like lookalikes and stuff like that and going to the pub, and then he's like, you know, let's talk about football. Hang on, Daichi, who's setting the agenda?
Approaching the midway point of the second half, Liverpool had 75% of the ball, but did look like they're growing frustrated and running out of ideas. You could have been excused for asking if Salah was playing at that point, and he still emerges with two goals.
Yeah.
Mikalenko. I think Mikalenko does a better job on Salah than Cucurella does on Saka, if we were comparing performances of the weekend. Both of them,
respect.
Both of them don't end up going their way. Tarkowski was blocking everything. Branthwaite begrudgingly does look a decent guy that they've got at the back there. I thought he was going to be a bit lumbersome, but he does seem to be very good. 6'5" centre back for Sean Dyche is
fits the mould, doesn't it? Yeah. To be fair, if you're competing with like Michael Keane, you go, well, I've got half a chance, haven't I?
Ghana is looking good for them. Doucouré and Onana, I said early on that they needed to move on from Ghana Gay because he looked like he was running through quicksand for the first part of the season. They've got a settled-ish team. Dwight McNeil coming in, Jack Harrison looked like he was going to be the guy for Deitch early on. It was all going so well. And then Konate, the challenge he gets away with is a second bookable offence in about every other game played this weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a second book in probably every other moment other than right then in the game. I don't really know what the ref's doing.
And the fact that he's already given a second yellow to someone, so it's not like it's... If anything, it'd be evening it up.
I thought for sure, for that reason, yeah. I thought, well, he's obviously going to give that.
I don't know if Beto oversells it. I don't know if he looks at Beto and says, he's got 70 yards to run. I've seen that man play football. This is not as dangerous as they want me to be.
Also begs the question, why Konate makes the challenge for that reason? Because you should be looking and going, you've even got someone obviously coming around the back supporting him, so it's not like he's the last man either.
It's not like he's slow either.
That's what I mean. He must look at Beto and go, well, I'm going to beat you in a race. You've got half the pitch to run in.
I genuinely think the heat from previous weeks, the Spurs game in particular, has made the ref just go, don't want that smoke.
For sure.
It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also think if it's the other way around, if second yellow first, I reckon he gives it if he hasn't already given one for some reason. I don't understand.
Oh, he absolutely gives it.
I don't understand how he's not given a yellow card for that. It's one of those, isn't it, where...
I can't understand how he's not given a second yellow card.
Hooking him immediately is such like a guilty in court sort of admission.
That ref must be going, don't sub him now. It's a Craig Pawson, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I bet Klopp is livid that he's cashing his chips on that game. That was not the game that he needed to use his free pass.
You need a game with City where like we get a ropey one, not Everton.
And Deitch said after the game, How that is not a second yellow is almost impossible in the modern game. That one was incredible to me. I'll be amazed if there's anyone out there who doesn't think it was a yellow. It's just bizarre for me.
Having said that, I wouldn't have had a problem with us going down to 10 men. I think it probably would have helped in a way. Just for the game, yeah. We would have had something just because Everton might have inclined to come on to us a little bit more and come out.
You do well with 10 men as well.
So. Yeah, maybe that's need to start more of that.
He said, I've asked the referee. He said he didn't feel it was a bookable offence. Their manager took him off as quick as he could. He knew he got away with one there.
He said as much as well. So, yeah.
And then, mere minutes later, a Diaz cross strikes Michael Keane's outstretched arm. Paulson rejects the initial appeals and then changes his mind after my arch enemy David Coote sends him to review the incident. It's pretty much the same handball, isn't it, as the Arsenal one, I think.
And in both instances, you see the ref watching the replay. How many of these do you need? Because you even surely, once you've seen this replay, you kind of go, okay, yeah, this is fairly clear.
Well, I think it's the proximity argument is what they're trying to say. And I do think there is maybe the refs every so often do want to be the guy that says, no, I'm sticking with what my initial thoughts was.
It's the only VAR footage I think I'd be interested in is if when the ref does that, decides, no, I'm sticking with mine, but we get 30 seconds after they're gone, he's going, this guy's a fucking prick. Can't believe he's overruled us. Who the fuck do you think he is?
Can we, or I'm not sure you're the man to ask you.
What are you trying to say?
Well, no, you don't know where I'm going. Can we stop the replay jokes every time a decision goes Liverpool's way? Because it's going to be an even longer season if we don't. I didn't think they were funny, really, in the first week of them happening. International break and another week onwards, they really aren't as funny as a lot of people say they are.
Have you seen the clip of the reporter asking Klopp, do you think the game should be replayed?
Is that this,
no, it's AI.
I thought it was. Yeah. It's done its job.
There were City fans believing one when Arteta was asked about De Bruyne being injured for the game and someone's done it and gone, to be honest, I hope he misses the rest of the season. And City fans like, this is disgusting.
That's incredible.
That you would wish this on another player.
I mean, between that and the conflict in the Middle East at the moment, I think that's the target audience, isn't it? Just the glance, the football fan, the one who's just going to eyeball it and just be like, oh yeah, that's true. Oh, I'm one of them.
Don't drag Arteta into that, please. Gravenberch, I thought, if I was going to go full football pundit, looked classy in the Liverpool midfield.
If you had to compare him to a luxury car, what car would you choose? Is it a Rolls Royce? It's a Rolls Royce.
He was at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
He looks very, very good. I think physically he looks like he's made to play in the Premier League. I think the fact you know that he's, 21, something like that, he's young. You know that you'd assume more to come from him. Did see some people saying, and they said he had a bad attitude, like, we're going to find that out 4 weeks into his Liverpool tenure.
If you're kicking up a fuss in your first month, you already do have a bad attitude.
But no, he looks very good. I think Szoboszlai has set such a standard that we kind of take him for granted now. So Gravenberch probably wasn't that much better, or even may not have even been better than Szoboszlai on the day, but he certainly stood out more first start in the Premier League and just...
Yeah, that's a silky player as well, wasn't he? I think even when you brought him in, we kind of knew he was going to be good on the eye. My question was probably more on the other end of things. And Everton didn't really pose as much questions in that regard, did they? Because you look at that midfield and you'd go, there's a lot of technical ability and athleticism in there, but you would look at it and go, okay, who really wants to be sitting and doing defending here out of Alexis, Gravenberch and Szoboszlai? None of them naturally want to. So you'd be interested with a midfield gets you going the other way, how we deal with that. But in games like this, try and play midfield like that. Try and just outplay teams because it works.
I got Gravenberch.
We get many more physical teams than the Everton midfield as well.
No, I didn't like
from their point of view, I'd have been looking at it going, we should have been pressing them a little bit more. Decore and Onana, even with down to 10 men, I think should probably be looking at it going, we could have got at them a little bit.
I got a Gravenberch shot straight in my request a bit. Like, I saw the first three corners fell to him on the edge of the area and I thought he's going to ping one of these at some point. And he hits one from about 6 yards out wide just before going off. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And then all I needed was Salah to score in Liverpool to win, which didn't look like it was coming, but I thought, I can accept that because I'm the only person that doesn't have Salah in his fantasy team because I hadn't done my wild card, and I kind of accepted Liverpool don't win, so...
Shame, I wouldn't be happy for you.
Got the winner, so... How much of a loss is Robertson if it's anywhere near the reported 10 weeks?
Shimikas wasn't great. I didn't think he was terrible, but wasn't great.
He seems to have the thing that we have with some teams' fan bases where their fan base are the only ones saying that he's not good. So I think if you asked most rival fans in the league, they'd say, well, we wish we had a good enough backup like Tsimikas is. But Liverpool fans seem to have, in the last at least 6 months, as far as I've seen, really say we need to be doing better than him.
Well, he's fallen into that squad player thing of you think he's good until he plays and then you go, I'm not sure about that at all. Until he was really, really old, you kind of had that with Milner, where it's like, well, he's a good squad player. And then when he played, oh, shit, that's not good.
I saw the stats of every time Robertson misses a game, and Klopp clearly doesn't agree because Tsimikas plays every time Robertson misses a game.
I think he's an absolutely fine stand-in. It's just that's a long period of time for this guy to stand in. He's generally shown substitute appearances here and there, a start here and there, and he's good. When he gets a longer period in the team, you do start to see the levels between him and Robertson. I say that Robertson hasn't played that well this season. No. He's been
There were some Liverpool accounts on Twitter that seemed to think that Klopp may play Joe Gomez there, but I've seen no evidence of that.
He did well when he came on, but I don't think he's going to. If anyone in our fan base thinks you're getting a better backup left back than Tsimikas, I would suggest probably giving your head a wobble. I don't think you are. I think he's as good a backup as you're ever going to get. So,
any chance Konate goes there? I'm literally just thinking of your next fastest.
I think he works as a stand-in there. Let's face it, the way we're playing now, people are looking at options for a signing there anyway, because that player may have to fill in sort of centre-back whilst Trent goes and does whatever Trent does.
Are we still just not hearing anything on Calvin Ramsey, his name? The Scottish fullback.
Yeah.
He's got loaned out.
Yeah, and had injury issues anyway. Pretty much from the moment we signed him, which is a shame.
Third highest potential right winger on FM, Ben Doak. So saw that the other day.
He is a player. I don't think we should put him a left back, but he's a player.
No, just made me think of it. If you were told that you had to lose one of Robertson or Trent for 10 weeks, who would be a bigger loss to Liverpool?
I still think Trent would be, because of what he gives you creatively. He's just fairly relatively unique, and also, as we touched on before, if we drop him, you're putting Joe Gomez in right back, and that is not like an elite defensive option. So,
not the game you expected, or was the game you expected in the end?
I suspected it might be a bit low on quality, and even though our record is so comprehensive against them, they normally do put up more of a fight than they do in some other games you've seen Everton in. I probably thought we might create more than we did. That was probably the disappointing aspect.
My main issue with rival fans complaining about the game was if you thought you were getting high-quality football in this game, I promise you were not getting the result that you were hoping for. If this was a game filled with high quality, it's Liverpool running away with the game. So for us neutrals watching, we want it to be as close for as long as possible and then see what happens in the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. We got close to there. If you wanted a good game of football, it was not going to be the kind of game you were hoping.
And what about the record of this game tells you that? How many like back and forths have we had, really? Not.
Which is,
even the close ones have been often us struggling to break them down, something like that, even when they have been close.
So. You get there eventually.
Think back of the Origi one where it bounces off the bar.
But even that is basically, that game is made by Pickford just not really sure what he's thinking, and Origi picking the ball up as well after he gets the winner, going back to the halfway line. Perfect.
I don't think there's ever been such a fringe player that's just had so many massive moments for one
so
player.
Good.
It's crazy.
Last thing then, before we call it a day, not sure anyone has much to say on Dalot's goal from 30 yards against...
It's a great ping.
So I had the rugby on the TV and the United game on my laptop, and then in like the space of 2 minutes, South Africa scored and Dalot put one in. This ain't good.
And Jack was just missing the last train home.
That was the nail in the coffin of the worst sporting day I've had for a very long time.
You're a big Sheffield fan.
They have perfected that we're going to be in, other than the Newcastle one, we're going to be in each of these games and lose. We're going to run really close here and lose.
Yeah, I don't feel as confident in that as I should be when we've got them at home.
Well, it's ridiculous. They should have got something against City, Spurs and United. You know,
they're going to get something against us because they beat us by at least a 2-goal margin the last time we played, both times at Bramall Lane. But it's 3-0 once on the Frank.
Yeah.
Ramsdale in goal.
Yeah.
I was about to say they're a bogey team, but Chelsea got a couple.
Yeah.
Big McBurney up top. All right, in closing then, Ollie Watkins and Callum Wilson both brought their tally to 5 goals, and I thought it was much more than that for both players, but I'm looking at the top scorers list.
English tax.
I went into this segment thinking Ollie Watkins was the top scorer in the league. I'll be completely honest there. Instead, he's the highest FPL scorer, so he's doing a lot of the top end of the pitch. Him yesterday, you might have to eat some words about him.
What?
You've been nasty about Ollie Watkins for a long time.
Check the pre-season pod.
I'm checking the overall... Your stats on Hollywood.
The pre-season pod, I said outside of the obvious golden boot contenders, i.e. Haaland and Salah, he could be your pick. You can check that.
Take it to the bank.
I might check that.
Shove that disrespect in your throat.
He looked particularly good yesterday. West Ham made certain parts easy, but there were certain things he was doing where I thought, I genuinely don't know what you can do about this. The one where I think it's Zuma, he faces up and Zuma shows him onto his weak foot and he just says,
fine.
Sand. Yeah. Just smashes it, roof of the net. When he's doing step overs in your area like that, forgive the trim, but someone has to have a word.
When he's a confidence player. When the confidence is flowing, he can do this. It's come back to me if he has a couple of months where he doesn't score, then you start wondering if he can kick a ball.
And if we're talking about him in the England conversation, if the ball drops to someone in the 6-yard box, who do you want to drop into, Wilson or Ollie Watkins? That's what you're asking.
Great next Wilson. Point for me that I was about to say, he's a nice guy. isn't adding much to that billing.
Does seem a lovely guy.
If, and I'll take Jack out of this for a second, if you woke up tomorrow as Todd Kennett, and you're now the owner of Chelsea. So there's been a mistake in the paperwork and you've got his money.
I've got his
and
money.
Chelsea and all of his riches.
Incredible.
And
my first priority is, right, what do I do about the striker situation?
So you get into the boardroom and they say, look, I've got to be honest, not a lot of players want to play for us. But we've got 3 English strikers. We think the fans will love them, get on board. We're willing to pay whatever for them, so don't worry about that. Callum Wilson, Ollie Watkins, Ivan Toney. Who do you want to bring in? Who do you bring in?
I'm still rolling with Toney.
Okay.
I'm still rolling with him.
Do you think he fits Chelsea best?
Yeah. I think he's actually probably more adaptable than the other two as well. I think they do need someone to lead the line and be a presence. And I think he can do that better than any of the above. I think they're close. They are all close, but I think he's the best of the bunch.
I think if I'm buying for Chelsea, I buy Ollie Watkins. I think if I'm buying for Arsenal or Tottenham, I buy Toney.
I think he could do the things you need. Callum Wilson's fitness would be what I'd rule him out. Otherwise, he'd be second. He'd still be ahead of Ollie Watkins to me.
So you are disrespectful to Ollie Watkins.
Well, I just think he's the third best of those three.
Do you buy any of the worries that some have about the pace of Ivan Toney? If you're trying to quicken up Arsenal's play, do you think that Toney holds that back at all?
I think he's quick enough. I think he's lightning quick, but he's quick enough that you can do it. And the work rate he's got, he can press from the front. I think he's a smart enough player that he can drop in when you need him to. He's kind of got a bit of everything where I would worry if Ollie Watkins had even a few games like he did at the start of the season at a bigger club, he might not get the time he'll get at somewhere like Villa and someone like, Arsenal fans, Chelsea fans, or whatever, probably quite easily get on his back, because he doesn't, when it goes wrong, he doesn't look, it's not the best on the eye, is he?
Watkins does this where, I mean, there's a time I was debating him or Calvert-Lewin for Arsenal. Could have gone a very different way.
You still debating that now? Because I know you're still rolling with DCL, so you're going to tell me about disrespecting Ollie Watkins, and I know you're still rolling with DCL.
I've been big on both guys. So,
yeah, but I know you're still, ultimately, push comes to shove, you go with Dominic.
Do I get the fit tax for DCL? Because
both stay fit. You're going DCL still, aren't you?
If both stay fit.
Yeah.
All day.
And you're looking at me like there's levels between them. Two just okay English strikers, and you're just... We just had a pod.
Okay.
Just a pod of... You just saying like outrageous things and then looking at me like I've said something outrageous.
By the way, I've just read that the delay in the Arsenal penalty is, and I tried to give this guy some credit earlier, he's actually asking if he should send Saliba off. So there's your update. That's what was going on. You can't trust these guys.
So we are robbed.
And Arteta's just said, when asked about the goalkeeping change, mistakes happen in football. Get him out of my sight. Jack, where do you stand on this situation? Rank them 1 to 3, not Chelsea, just
anywhere. I think still Tony, I think, has quality when he's not playing well or not scoring. I think Ollie Watkins is big in diamonds, always going to be confidence. When it, like you've said, it's just echoing TK's sorts of, when it doesn't look good, it looks terrible.
Do you think we're putting Tony on a pedestal a bit? Do you think he's growing better in not playing?
A little bit, probably.
I think also he's left a bit of a vacuum at Brighton. Well, and Bournemouth's goal says otherwise, but apart from that, they are lacking something. They don't look the same outfit. I think the results speak for themselves.
I do think, to counter what you've said, there's been a lot of chat this week that is Ollie Watkins the best striker after, English striker after Kane? Which would be the opposite thing to what you're saying, where we're maybe hyping Tony up in his absence. I think that is literally, this guy hasn't played, so we're forgetting about him in terms of how he's being talked about. Yeah. To be honest, I think the situation behind Kane is a fluid sort of, at any given point in form, Tony, Watkins or Wilson could probably jump.
3 weeks ago, Eddie was in this conversation.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of years ago, Patrick Bamford was. Things can happen.
We were in talks to buy him as well. I think Ollie Watkins, the style of his play, when he's on it, is more dynamite than any of the players that we've just listed off.
I think. He's so direct as well.
I don't know that any of the other players that we've mentioned can score the second goal that he does yesterday. Standing him up, the step overs, the pace, all of those things. I don't think any of the others can do that.
It's consistency.
Well, I think
Wilson might feel he probably can.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Did you see that tweet about Callum Wilson yesterday?
No.
Outside of the box, he looks like he's playing in jeans. have you ever seen Callum Wilson do a step over?
I don't know. Even the finish he does, I know it's just a kind of a poacher's finish, but there's a touch to it, and there's just something about him that, if he's got the pace to pull it off, he's technically decent, not unbelievable, but...
Callum Wilson's very good. I think the numbers he has means he's going to somehow work his way into, someone's going to try a Streets Won't Forget Callum Wilson thing in a couple of seasons, probably. Well, his numbers are up there with like anyone in the league when it comes to goals to minutes ratio and all of this. And half of that is because of the minutes that he does miss.
Yeah.
I don't know. Watkins yesterday, I was just all in. Emery does do this with strikers, though. And the question is, at what point is it you're in good form, or at what point is it that this is the player you are? Like, how long would Ollie Watkins, how long would this run of form have to be where it's not a run of form anymore?
A season.
Yeah, the rest of the season.
Okay.
If he gets to the end of the season, he carries on this vein of form and he's in the conversation of Golden Boot. If Haaland doesn't do a Haaland, then that's when people think, right, is it time for a move or whatever? But then he also strikes me as the kind of person that could get a move away from Villa and it'd just be completely horrible to watch.
So what you think, he's just got a bit of a golden touch at the moment? Because they said yesterday, what was it? He's touching the ball 5 times less than he was last season, but finishing at 5 times the rate.
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially. I think Aston Villa coincides with them playing well as a unit as well.
Yeah, he's going to play every game for them. He's not going to rotate Ollie Watkins.
Go back to the Chelsea scenario where you go, right, we haven't really...
I think Ollie Watkins is so perfect for Chelsea compared to the others.
What I'm saying is it's a completely different conversation where we're not really clicking, haven't clicked until the last couple of games up front. You pick a guy in there that can just do something that our team can't currently do if they haven't got a good team playing around them. And I think Tony's that guy for that moment.
I'm just looking at Chelsea as who can I put in there to stretch the pitch as much as these guys? And then
we've already got that.
He matches that.
Surely you want someone else to complement people like Sterling and Mudrick are going to stretch it. And this guy can drop in and do a little bit more. It's not like Tony can't do that. When him and Mbeumo play, they often do.
Tony than any of the guys there. And
you can forgive me for thinking it doesn't sound like it.
Well, I said all of last season, I said he should go to the World Cup because I said after Kane, he can play the style that he does. He's the next best there. He's the next
clinical. I was always amazed that Wilson gets on as well when the only reason the backup striker is going to play is because Kane gets injured. So we take the most injury-prone strikers. Yeah. I always find that weird.
Well, there's a thing where injury-prone players don't think they're injury-prone. If you ask Wilson...
Michael Owen was adamant he wasn't. Just hang on, Michael.
You can listen to Wilshere say it, and he still says, I had one bad injury, and then you look and the rest were just... I was just unlucky with this. Yeah. It's just the way it goes.
I mean, your thing is, I think if you had to make a bet, is this flash in a pan, good form from Ollie Watkins, or this is the player? I think I'd have to lean on this is just a golden touch at the minute, because I haven't seen anything that tells me he's going to do this for what Jack said, like a season. I've seen he can do it in form.
Okay, so then another question would be, how many patches of good form do you have to where that is your ability? Then the rest is you're out of form. This is your standard.
I think a season. I think
because we're flipping it, aren't we? We're saying that this is in good form at the moment. Is it what the rest of the time maybe is in bad form and this is his standard?
Well, this is the thing. The fact that we're asking that shows that, well, now we're sitting up and taking notice. If this guy can keep consistency for a season, then we start moving the goalposts on.
If he's streaky, that's probably an Aston Villa striker.
Yeah.
So sometimes you look like a top striker, sometimes you look average.
I think that applies to probably 15 of 20.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's why you're at those clubs. That's why you're not at the top. But the way we will talk about it is the English media or something like that, and the way you're talking about it at times now, is a little bit like he's maybe better than that. And we need... By the way, though, when you look at it, someone like Rashford, you could look at this and go... He has large spells out of form. It's just when he's on form, he's red hot. Mm-hmm. And he's at Man United, so he was sort of at one point seen as the next sort of big hope. He doesn't kind of get the scrutiny here. But I think that's the biggest thing against calling him like a world-class player. You'd go, well, these patches when he's out of form doesn't look pretty.
All right, I think that just about does us. So I can sum up the rest of the games. City won again. Newcastle look good, don't they?
They do look good. They could have dicked Palace by 8-0.
Yeah, if we're talking form, they may have just been out of form for a couple of games, a couple of tough games at the start of the season, and now they're showing us their true selves. I don't know. Mm. Hey, goalkeeper passing it to striker. I've seen that before. There's maybe a conversation to be had about a certain Newcastle player, but I don't know what we can or can't say, so save that for a rainy day. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back. Adios.